Chapter 3. I experience what happens next in fragments. The searing pain near my neck from Jax's shot. The world around me blurring. The distant thud I hear as I collapse against the wall. A jolt of panic that cuts through the sudden numbing of my limbs. I've been drugged. The thought struggles up through the molasses, drowning my mind. I turn my eyes up at Jax as she approaches. What did you do to me? I try to demand an explanation, but my entire body feels like it's made of rubber now. And even as I stay awake, I find myself sliding sideways until I'm lying on the floor, focusing on Jax's boots. My heart beats rapidly, the sound drumming in my ears. Am I dreaming? No, I'm awake. I can see what's happening around me, even though it seems to be happening inside a dim tunnel, and the edges of my vision are dark. The next thing I remember is the feeling of my arm draped around Jax's shoulders, of her dragging me down the tunnel and toward a black taxi. I try to focus on the four-leaf clover symbol on its glowing cab light. The faint smell of new leather permeates the space. Jax looks down at me. From my view, her face is swimming in a haze. You'll be fine, she says calmly to me. You just won't remember this tomorrow morning. My head lolls weakly to one side as the car begins to move, rumbling over the unfinished tracks in the tunnel. Slivers of weak light illuminate parts of the dark passage, and I remember the flash of gray against black, against gray on the fabric seats. I struggle to remember our route. My heartbeat is irregular, fluttering frantically. Can I record a memory? I try to bring up the menu, try to send an invite to connect to Hammy or Roshan, to anyone. But my mind is far too numb to make it happen. Help me. I try in vain to send a message out. Help. I want to scream Jax's name as I stare at her, but I feel like I'm still wading through the air, and my tongue feels thick and immobile. My level changes as we emerge from the tunnel into the night, and suddenly, we're surrounded by office buildings that rise up along either side of the street, like woods bordering a path. They stretch up ominously, like living things.
Welcome to Omotesando District. Plus 150 points. Daily score, plus 150. You leveled up. Level 85.
My determination momentarily shifts as I notice the change in the sky's colors. Unlike Shinjuku, where the Phoenix Riders' scarlet and gold coat everything, Omotesando's favorite team is the Winter Dragons, so the sky here is covered instead with a sheet of undulating blue and orange gold. The light posts are draped in vibrant banners, and over them hover virtual versions of the Dragons' players. Jax leans over briefly to check on me. She barely glances at the passing celebrations, and when she does, she watches them stoically, without much interest. I fight to keep looking at her, but my thoughts fade into darkness. My nightmares are full of faces. There is Jax's grim look as she points her gun down at a human and puts a bullet through his skull. There is Hideo, his voice whispering my name close to my ear. His furrowed brow cutting dark lines over his eyes, his hair brushing against me as he leans in. Then there is Zero, a mystery. I can only see him in the form I've known, his black armor reflecting red light surrounding him. His features completely hidden behind a black helmet as he sits across from me and laces his fingers together. He's telling me to run. I don't know how long we ride in the taxi before it finally comes to a stop behind a building. Jax opens my door and helps me out. I turn weakly toward her, trying to move my limbs, but all I can feel is the faint sensation of pavement beneath my dragging feet. Jax has her arm around my waist, keeping me up, and she's saying something to people standing at the building's sliding glass doors. It looks like a hotel.
Out puttying too hard.
She explains in a sing-song voice to the attendee at the entrance. I want to blurt out that she's lying, but it takes all my strength just to stay upright. The world spins. Remember this. But even the thought itself flitters out of my mind the instant I think it. My vision blurs more, and the more I fight it, the more it fades. I end up focusing on Jax. She runs a hand through her hair and casts me an unconcerned glance. There's the inside of an elevator, then a hallway. As I start to fade away again, all I can hear is Jax announce our arrival. Tell Zero she's here. Chapter 4. 5 days until the Warcross closing ceremony. Darkness. Two voices.
She should have been up by noon. You shot her with too strong a dose.
I thought she could handle it.
Let her sleep then.
Weak light slanting across my face makes me squint. I roll over in bed and curl into a ball. Where am I? A swirl of images rotates through my mind. Dreams, maybe, but brighter. Hazier in a way that I can't explain. I furrow my brow. Was there a taxi? A black car. An unfinished subway tunnel. A district of colors. My heart pounds furiously. I lie still for a while, willing it to slow down until I'm able to breathe at a normal rate again. Then, I open my eyes. The orange light of early morning streaks across my bedsheets, coming gradually into focus as my vision adjusts. No, wait. This isn't morning light at all. It's sunset. I blink, disoriented. I'm lying in a bed in a luxuriously stark hotel room, adorned with gray and white striped wallpaper and a series of plain wall paintings. Waves of memories rush back at me now. The assassins, the subway tunnel, the image of Jax standing over my pursuer, the gunshot, the black coats. And then, what? The last thing I remember is Jax pointing her gun straight at me. She drugged me, I'm sure of it. Maybe it was to make sure I didn't remember anything about where we were going or what path we took to get here. But now here I am, lying in an unfamiliar room with holes in my memory. I bolt upright. I'm still dressed in the same clothes I'd been wearing that night. I check myself gingerly for any injuries, but besides some bruises and a sore spot on my neck, I'm unharmed. My moment of panic pools gradually into a sense of foreboding that invades my chest. I watch the faint light filtering in through my window. It takes me a moment to realize that I have a dozen unread messages from the writers, each one more frantic than the last. I frown. How long have I been missing if they're this worried? Had they heard about the gunshots fired near where we had dinner? It must be on the news, unless Hideo can somehow control that, too. I hesitate, wondering whether I should tell my teammates what really happened, before sending out some quick replies of reassurance. I'm okay. Don't worry. Lost reception for a bit. Talk soon. Then I freeze when I reach the last unread message. It's an incoming invite, accompanied by a profile image haloed in soft blinking green. Hideo is calling me, asking me to link with him. My heart jumps into my throat. What does he want? Is it possible he knows what's happened to me, even though I'm using beta lenses? I glance quickly around the room, looking for any sign that I'm being recorded, but there aren't any cameras in the ceilings. Don't answer it. I know I shouldn't. But I still find myself lifting my hand, reaching up and tapping on the invite hovering in my view. I regret it immediately. Maybe the drug Jax used on me has lowered my inhibitions and hijacked my common sense, but it's too late now. I don't see him appear right away, but through our newly formed link, I can feel a trickle of his emotions. there a knot of urgency and fear.
Emika.
I startle again. Hideo's voice is speaking in my mind, his telepathic messaging invention. I should be used to it by now, but even after a mere couple of weeks, his voice hits me just like it did the first time we spoke on the phone. I narrow my eyes, more annoyed at myself than at him. Why are you calling me? I say to him.
You called me.
This brings me up short. I did? It must have happened while I was drugged. Maybe an unconscious reaction. Now I have a faint recollection of trying desperately to call for help. Apparently, I'd decided to call Hideo. I wince. Couldn't I have called Hammy or Roshan instead? Any of the riders? Did my instinct have to be Hideo? Well, it was an accident, I counter.
Where are you?
I felt nothing but panic coming from you. You asked for help. Then you disconnected. Hearing Hideo's voice in my mind is so overwhelming that I almost want to sever our link right away. Then I remember that he can sense my emotions. In return, a stab of concern from him hits me, followed by a ripple of unease. His brother's name teeters at the edge of my mind, ready for me to tell him. The thought is so strong that I almost send it. With a huge effort, I pull it back. I'm fine.
You're fine.
He sounds doubtful as he echoes my words back at me. There's another pause on his end, and an instant later, my surroundings shift. I find myself sitting on a white couch across from an open terrace, staring out at a twilight of glittering city lights beyond a balcony lit by a circular stone fire pit. Wherever he is, it's not his home that I'm familiar with, nor is it Henka Games. It's an estate more lavish than anything I've ever seen in my life, overlooking a city I don't recognize. Baroque columns tower up to the sky, and gossamer curtains drift on either side of the entrance leading out to the balcony. Neatly trimmed bushes dot the space. Somewhere in the distance come the buzz of voices and the clinking of glasses, the sounds of a party. Hideo's shadowed silhouette stands against the open terrace, leaning against the railing of stone pillars. Dim light outlines the edges of his body. My dream. His hands on me. His lips on my skin. I try in vain to stop my cheeks from heating up. It takes me another moment to notice a young woman at his side. I don't recognize her, but in the darkness, I can tell that she's in a slender, glittery dress, her long hair falling in waves past her shoulders. She leans close to Hideo, her hand running along his arm, and whispers something in his ear with a smile. Bitterness shoots hot through my veins before I can rein it in. Who the hell is this, and why is she cozying up to Hideo? And why the hell do I care? I'd broken things off between us anyway. Is it such a surprise that someone is already trying to catch his attention? Hideo doesn't lean back toward her. Instead, he gives her his polite smile that I've come to know so well, then murmurs something to her that makes her remove her hand from his arm. She tilts her head at him, flashing him another smile, and then strides off the balcony. Her stilettos click rhythmically against the floor tiles. Hideo turns his attention to me without watching her go. He doesn't look like someone capable of controlling the minds of almost everyone in the world. He doesn't seem like the reason why we might all lose our freedom of thought. Right now, he's the person I fell for. Flesh and blood and painfully human, looking at me like he's seeing me for the first time. A jolt of jealousy from him surges through our link, and I realize that from his view, it looks like I could be in someone else's bed. I allow myself a petty moment of satisfaction. Where are you now? I mutter. He glances briefly over his shoulder at the sparkling city behind him. Singapore, he replies. I have some financial business to take care of here. Financial business, billionaire dealings. He's probably expecting me to comment on what kind of party he's at, or the identity of the woman who just left. But I'm not about to give him that. Well, I say archly, I guess you seem fine.
What happened to you? Hideo says. His words are cold and distant, but a torrent of his emotions crowds my mind. Joy at seeing me again? Anger, frustration, fear for my safety.
For an instant, I want to tell him that I miss him, that I keep dreaming about him every night, that I can't bear to turn my back on him, even now.
But then the reality of our situation returns, and my own temper flares.
Nothing. I was just about to leave this link.
He steps toward me until it's as if he were standing barely a few inches away.
Then why are you still here?
He says. It's been a long time since I've heard the ice in his voice, the tone he uses for strangers. The realization hits me harder than I thought it would.
You have no right to be upset with me.
I'm not.
I just don't want to see you.
Isn't that what you want?
More than you know, I snap.
You're hunting me, aren't you?
He murmurs. His emotions suddenly shift into doubt, the reminder that we have a wall separating us. He looks sidelong at me.
That's why you reached out to me, isn't it? This is all a setup. You were lying about needing help. This is part of your hunt.
You're suspicious of me? I scowl at him. Do I need to remind you of what you're doing?
Enlighten me, he says coldly.
Are you serious? You must have heard about the long lines at police stations. You've seen footage of people committing suicide. None of that chills you?
Of convicted sex traffickers committing suicide. Of untried murderers turning themselves in.
Meanwhile, reported crimes of the past week have plummeted.
Hideo's eyes are hard and unmoving.
Now, what are you trying to convince me of?
He's confusing me, and it only angers me more. You shouldn't have this power.
The algorithm is unbiased.
You betrayed me. You made me think I was working with you to do something good.
That's what you're most angry about? Not the algorithm. This.
Hideo lowers his head, closes his eyes for a heartbeat, and opens them again.
You're right. I wish I'd told you sooner, and I'm sorry for that. But you know why I'm doing this, Amika. I opened my heart to you.
Your choice to, not mine, I fire back. It's as if you believe I owe you something for it.
That's what you think?
An edge comes into his voice, a warning.
That I'd use my past to bait you? Because I wanted something from you?
Didn't you?
I say. My words are hoarse.
Why did you open up to me anyway? I was just another bounty hunter on your payroll, just another girl passing through your life.
I never told anyone about my past, he snaps back. You know that.
How can I believe anything you say now? Maybe what happened to your brother is something you tell every girl you want to get into your hot spring.
I can tell I've gone too far the instant the words escape my lips. Hideo flinches away. I swallow, telling myself not to feel bad for spitting my retort out at him.
We're done here, he says in a low voice. I suggest you not waste our time by contacting me again. He disconnects our link before I can respond.
The suite, the glittering city lights, and Hideo's blue-black silhouette vanish abruptly, and the white couch I'd been lying on shifts back into the silk sheets of my bed. I realize that I'm trembling all over, my forehead hot and damp with a light sheen of sweat. My burst of fury is over as quickly as it came. My shoulders droop. I shouldn't have said it. But all I want to do when I'm angry is stab the deepest wound I can find. And it shouldn't matter anymore, should it? If the distance in his tone hurts, it's just because I'm not used to it. Because I'm exhausted. Too much has happened over the course of the day. And with Hideo's brief presence, I'm suddenly so worn out that all I want to do is sink into my bed until I disappear.
I shake my head, then head to the bathroom. In the mirror, I see a dark bruise on one side of my throat. It must be from where Jax shot me with that drug. I rub carefully at the sore spot before I turn away and step into the shower. The steam from the hot water clears my head a bit. Maybe I was a fool to think I could ever pull Hideo off his current path. If anything, my conversation with him has only confirmed how unwilling he is to compromise. He's unfazed by what's happening around the world, and that means he's moving full steam ahead to make sure the last 2% of the population is hooked into the algorithm too. Soon, that'll include me. I have to stop Hideo, before it's too late to pull him back. I repeat this to myself, trying to feel convinced, until the water has wrinkled my fingertips. By the time I step out, the after effects of the drug seem to have worn off, and I feel a sense of alert wariness instead of the fog of panic. I walk out into the bedroom with a towel wrapped around me and bring up my menu. I know I'm in a hotel in Omotesando, but that's about all I can find. Nothing about my suite or this building tells me anything about the Black Coats. Not that I'd expect it to. An hour has passed when I finally get an invite to connect from someone I don't have in my contacts. I'm about to accept it, but it goes through before I can. I freeze, clutching my towel closer. Has someone hacked into my Neuralink? You're awake. I recognize Jax's voice. I feel a curious mix of relief and unease at her words. Are you watching me? I just saw your status blink green. She sounds as clipped as I remember. And where am I exactly? A hotel, of course. You should probably stay here for a while, at least until you're no longer at the top of the lottery. Why'd you drug me yesterday?
2 days ago. You've been asleep for an entire day.
I'd lost a day? I blink. So this isn't the sunset after the night Jax had come for me. No wonder all the writers sounded so worried. Why'd you do it, Jax? I ask again. After my argument with Hideo, I'm in no mood to play around. Relax. I needed to get you here without you causing a scene. You said you didn't trust me entirely, so I couldn't trust you not to attack me in the car. I could have thrown a sack over your head, but I didn't want to freak you out. I make an incredulous face. Because I totally didn't freak out when you shot me instead. She responds with a bored sigh. You're fine. Now go get dressed.
Why?
Because Zero is heading upstairs to see you. That brings my sarcastic comments to a halt. The thought of Zero coming into my suite sends a trill of fear through me, and I find myself stepping toward the bathroom before Jax can say another word. I'll be ready, I mutter. I pull on a fresh change of clothes that I find folded neatly in my room's closet. They're crisp in their newness and fit a little loosely. The sight of myself in the mirror, dressed fully in black, only reminds me of how foreign everything feels right now. How deeply I've gone into a hive, and how likely it is that I might never come out of it. And I look quickly away, wishing my old clothes hadn't been ruined by blood and smoke. I'm smoothing down my new shirt when I hear a soft knock on my door, followed by silence. I hesitate.
Come in,
I say, feeling strange giving someone permission while I'm the one here against her will. The door of my suite opens and closes, followed by the soft sound of footsteps against the carpet. He's here. I take one more deep breath. My heart won't stop racing, but at least I don't see it spelled out on my face. Then I step out to see someone already seated in a chair by the window, waiting for me. Chapter 5. There are three of them, actually. Jax stands beside a chair, her hand resting casually on the handle of her gun. She looks relaxed, but her gray eyes follow me without blinking. And I know that if she wanted to, she could whip out that gun and kill me before I could even open my mouth. Sitting in the chair next to her is an older woman with glasses, her silver-streaked hair tied back into a neat bun that matches her neat clothes. A faint, pleasant perfume hangs in the air around her. She has the sort of face that belongs to a scholar. Careful eyes, a controlled mouth, a stare that analyzes me for the unspoken things. Her hands are folded neatly in her lap. She gives me a sympathetic smile when she sees me looking her way. But it's the third person, the one whose presence owns the room, who stops me in my tracks. He leans back against the wall, his arms crossed casually over his chest, one of his legs propped against the other. His face is no longer hidden behind a black helmet, and instead of his armor, he's wearing a simple black sweater and dark pants, his shoes polished to a shine. But his mannerisms are unmistakable to me. One side of his mouth tilts up in a smile. "Well, Amika," says Zero. "Welcome." The first time I ever crossed paths with Zero, he was nothing more than a snippet of code, a glitch in Hideo's matrix that runs all of Warcross. And the first time I ever saw a virtual version of him, he was standing in the middle of the Dark World's pirate den, surrounded by people all hiding behind fake names and exaggerated avatar monsters. Even then, he'd stood out. Against a backdrop of monsters, he was a lean, dark, armored shadow, as silent and unapologetic as the night. I can still remember the chill he'd sent through me at the mere sight of his virtual figure, the way my hands clenched and my nails cut into my palms. Now, I gape at his exposed face. It's like looking at Hideo through a dream. He's younger by a couple of years, his features harsher and fiercer. Still, I can immediately see the resemblance between the two, the liquid dark eyes and hair, and I can easily recognize in him the small boy from Hideo's reconstructed memory. In a more normal setting, after a more normal day, he'd probably seem like a handsome stranger anyone might meet on the street. The kind of boy who's never had trouble getting a date or making a friend. The sort who doesn't talk much but grips everyone's attention when he does. But here, there's something unsettling about him that I can't quite put my finger on. While Hideo has a piercing stare, there's a wildness in Sasuke's eyes. Something deep and unfeeling. Something less human. I don't know how to describe its unusual light. It draws me in at the same time it repels me. The older woman speaks. Her eyes are soft, sweeping over me from head to toe. "This is the girl, then?" she says to Zero in an accent I can't quite place.
"Amika Chen," Zero replies.
"Amika Chen." The woman rests her chin against her hand and frowns. She looks exhausted. We should have given her an extra day to rest.
"We don't have that kind of luxury," Zero says. "She was the only one of Hideo's bounty hunters who managed to stay on my trail. She can handle a long day."
At that, the woman gives me a helpless look. "I'm sorry," she addresses me directly.
"Everything will make more sense once we explain."
Zero tips his head subtly in her direction.
"This is Dr. Dana Taylor," he says, "and you already know who I am."
He studies my face.
"Jax tells me you gave her a little trouble."
I finally find my voice. "Well, it's not like she killed anyone in front of me or anything." "Come on," Jax mutters to Zero. "She's completely inexperienced. Did you know she's never even fired a gun before?" "I've fired stun guns," I say. Jax holds a hand out in my direction. "See?"
"With you around, she doesn't need a gun," Zero replies.
Jax makes an annoyed sound, but doesn't counter that. Zero observes me in the same way he'd done in the dark world. My heart beats a rapid rhythm at his gaze. For all I know, he's doing a scan of all my data, checking to make sure I'm not signaling anyone to follow me here. Does he remember his brother? How could he possibly forget, or worse, not care?
I sent her to save your life, you know, he says.
I turn my head up to meet his gaze as my anger flares again. You forced me here under threat of death. Zero's eyes swivel to the black door I'd entered through before settling back on me.
You accepted my invitation.
And how do I know you didn't send those other assassins after me too, just to set this entire thing up?
You think I have nothing better to do with my time than mess with you?
I think you play more games with me than you should. Dr. Taylor frowns at Zero before she takes a deep breath and looks at me.
We're glad you're safe, Emeka, she continues in a soft tone. You may not have heard of Jax before, but she's well known in our circles. The sight of her defending you will send a clear message to every hunter watching the assassination lottery to stay away from you.
I look over my shoulder toward the door, feeling no safer at this knowledge. If I dared to turn my back on Zero and leave this place, would Jax put a bullet through my head? Zero points at my eyes.
I'm assuming you use the beta lenses.
Yes, I reply. Why?
You're going to need some extra protection on your account.
Zero flicks his hand subtly, and a menu pops up between us, asking me to accept his invite. I hesitate. Zero gives me a wry smile.
It's not a virus, he says.
I'm not in much of a position to argue with him, so I accept it. A download bar appears. 55%. It completes and vanishes as quickly as it had arrived. Zero takes a step toward me. He holds out one of his palms. As I stare at it, a black virtual cuff materializes to hover over his hand. Then, he places that hand over my arm, and the cuff snaps into place around my wrist with a clean click, like a shackle. A coat of black armor identical to Zero's virtual gear clips all over my body in a ripple of movement, and for a brief moment, I look like I once did in that red virtual cavern when Zero first approached me during the championships. The armor disappears again, as if it had faded away right into my skin. The cuff glows a soft blue before it vanishes. It reappears only when I stare long enough at my wrist. I'd seen the same thing on Jax when she first showed up during my attack.
It's a black coat, Mark, he says. You are now under our watch. No one else will touch you.
He's officially claimed me for the black coats. I'm theirs now. I rub at my new cuff. Even though it's a virtual object, I can almost feel it burning into me. So what are you all? Vigilantes or something? Zero returns to where he'd been leaning against the wall.
That term's a little sensational, but I guess it applies.
Taylor turns her steady gaze on me.
We believe that too much power in the hands of a single entity is always a dangerous thing. So we fight that. Whenever and wherever we can. We have wealthy patrons who support our cause.
I wait for her to tell me who those patrons are, but she doesn't. My eyes flicker uneasily to Zero. How many of you are there?
Our numbers shift, depending on what we're doing, he replies. We bring on those we need and part ways when we're done. But there are, of course, a handful of us who are always involved. And as you know, our current target of interest is Hideo Tanaka and his Neuralink.
So, I wasn't wrong. I've known since Hideo first hired me that someone was lurking in the shadows, trying to undo his work and threaten his life. But it's one thing to be investigating those clues, and another thing to hear it confirmed. My gaze returns to Jax. The assassination attempt on Hideo, I say, my voice suddenly tight. Right after the first Warcross game, Was that? Jax fixes me with her cool gray eyes before I can even finish my sentence. She shrugs.
Would have succeeded had his security detail not been so tight, she replies.
Anyway, it doesn't matter anymore. Killing him now won't disable his algorithm.
Jax had been the one who tried to kill Hideo.
My eyes dart to Zero, searching for a reaction from him that's as horrified as how I feel. But his face stays calm and collected. It's as if Hideo were nothing but a name to him.
Let's talk about our common goals, Amika, Zero says, because they're one and the same, aren't they?
I stare at him, trying to sound calm.
To take down the Neuralink's algorithm.
Zero nods once in approval.
And do you know what we need to do that?
The words come out of me, cold and calculating.
To get into Hideo's account.
Yes. Through someone who's capable of winning that kind of trust.
You.
They need someone to get into Hideo's systems, and in order to do that, they need to get under his skin. But after my talk with him, I'm going to be the last person he'll be willing to confide in.
What about Zero himself? Surely Sasuke is a better option to use than me.
A million questions threaten to spill out of my mouth. In the light, Zero's eyes are a very dark brown, and if I look closely, I can see thread-thin slashes of gold in them. The vision of him as a small boy, his high-pitched laugh as he ran through the park with his brother, flashes through my mind. I think of him grinning as Hideo looped the blue scarf around his neck, and him calling over his shoulder as he went to retrieve the plastic egg that Hideo had thrown too far. Sasuke should be the only connection to Hideo that the Black Coats would ever need. If Sasuke were to approach Hideo, he would give up the world for his lost brother, would move heaven and earth if Sasuke asked him to. Would Sasuke do the same in return? Why is there no hint of emotion for his brother in his eyes? I push down the rising tide of questions in my mind. There's too little that they're revealing about the Black Coats, and something about the tension in the air tells me that I shouldn't be openly asking about Zero's connection to Hideo yet. I need to wait for a moment alone with him.
So, you're trying to stop Hideo out of the goodness of your hearts? I ask.
Why else would we be doing it?
I throw my hands up.
I don't know. You haven't told me much of anything about your shadow group. Why'd you try to kill me when you blew up the Riders' dorms? Was that out of your goodwill too?
Zero seems completely unsurprised by my remark.
Sometimes, doing the right thing means making hard decisions along the way.
And how do I know you won't make another hard decision with me?
You don't believe me.
No. I don't believe that you're telling me everything I need to know.
Taylor suddenly straightens.
You went to prison for a while, didn't you? She says.
Earned a red mark on your record because you saw an injustice done to some girl you barely knew.
My jaw tightens at her words. You've been snooping around in my files. She ignores my tone, her eyes bright.
Why did you do it, Amika? What did you get out of it, aside from years of hardship? What took you down that path? You used your talents to break into the private files of all your fellow students. You released that data onto the internet. That was a crime, wasn't it? And yet, you did it anyway. Because you were standing up for a girl who had been wronged.
The memory rushes back. My arrest, my trial, the sentencing.
You're still so young, she goes on. Is it so hard for you to believe that someone else might want to do the same? Try to remember how you felt at that time. Then take that and expand it into something bigger than yourself. A group of people, all of whom might believe in a higher cause.
I don't say anything. Taylor leans toward me. I know you're hesitant, she says gently. I can see it on your face.
your distrust of everything I'm telling you, and I understand why.
We didn't get off on the best foot. She glances at Zero with a lifted eyebrow. But you're now aware of what Hideo's true plans are, and no matter how little you know about us or we know about you, we're both on the same side. We have no intention of harming an ally. No one's going to force your hand.
Her voice hardens now, a tone that doesn't seem to match her face.
Nothing I've ever seen has frightened me quite as much as what Hideo Tanaka is doing with the Neuralink's algorithm. Isn't that why you cut ties with him, in spite of everything he could give you?
She says this in a way that hints at my brief relationship with Hideo, and to my annoyance, my cheeks warm. I wonder exactly how much she knows about me. My eyes flicker again to Zero.
A sudden surge of rage grips me. All I can remember in this moment is the way Zero had stood there in the dark hall, hidden behind his virtual armor, mocking me as I discovered all my files had been emptied. All I can feel is the same skin-crawling sensation of Zero being inside my mind, his theft of my most precious memories. This is someone who has betrayed me before, and now, here he is, asking me to help him.
Why should I trust you? I ask. After everything you've done. Zero regards me with a penetrating look.
It doesn't matter if you trust me or not. Hideo's moving forward regardless, and we're running out of time. We're going to stop him from abusing his Neuralink, and we can do it faster with your help. That's all I can tell you.
I think of the colorful maps of minds that Hideo had shown me. Then the ability he had to stop someone dead in his tracks by doing nothing more than shifting that map. I think of the eerie blankness on people's faces.
So, Zero laces his fingers together. Are you in?
I'm ready to refuse him. He had taken my soul out of my chest and done something obscene with it. Even now, he is messing with my emotions. I want to turn my back on Zero and step out of this room. Do what Roshan said and return to New York and never think about any of this again. Instead, I scowl at Zero. What do you have in mind?
Chapter 6.
Zero smiles. He exchanges a stare with Taylor, then with Jax. And as he does, Taylor rises from her seat. She gives me an encouraging nod before she turns away.
Glad to have you on board,
she says over her shoulder, and then heads out of the room. Jax lingers a second longer, locked in a silent exchange with Zero that feels like something shared between familiar partners. She doesn't bother looking my way before she leaves, too.
I'll be next stool, she calls out as she goes. I can't tell if it's meant to reassure or threaten me that she'll be on guard so close by.
The door closes behind her without a sound, leaving me completely alone with Zero. He moves closer to me, looking amused at my fascination and unease.
You've always worked on your own, haven't you? He says. It's uncomfortable for you, being mocked with a group.
Somehow, his physical appearance seems even more intimidating than his virtual one. I realize I'm clenching my fists and force myself to relax my hands. I was doing fine with the Phoenix Riders, I reply.
He nods. And that's why you've already told them everything you're doing, right? That you're here now.
I narrow my eyes at his mocking tone. And what about you?
What about me?
How long have you been with the Black Coats? Were you the one who formed them? Or have you never been a loner? He puts his hands in his pockets in a gesture so reminiscent of Hideo that for an instant, I feel like he's the one here instead.
As long as I can remember,
he answers. Now's my chance. All the questions swirling in my mind sit on the edge of my tongue.
My breath is suddenly short as the words pour out. You're Sasuke Tanaka, aren't you? My statement is greeted only by silence. You're Hideo's younger brother, I urge him, as if he didn't hear me the first time. His eyes are absolutely devoid of any emotion. I know, he says. I blink, thinking I'd misheard him. You know? There's something unusual about his eyes again, that empty stare. It's as if what I've said means nothing. It seems irrelevant to him, like I'd revealed he was related to some faraway stranger he knows absolutely nothing about, and not the brother he'd grown up with, the brother who had destroyed his own life and mind out of grief for him, the brother he is now trying to stop. You... My words falter, my voice turning incredulous as I look at him. You're Hideo's brother. How can you know that and still talk like this? Again, no response. He looks completely unaffected by my words. Instead, he steps closer to me until we're separated by a mere foot. A blood relation is meaningless, he finally replies. Hideo's my brother, but more importantly, he's my mark. My mark. The words are harsh and cutting. I think back to the grin on young Sasuke's face in Hideo's memory when they were both at the park. I puzzle over the deep wounds that Sasuke left behind in Hideo and his family when he disappeared. This is a boy who had been loved deeply. Now he doesn't seem to care at all. But, I say faltering, what happened to you? You vanished when you were a little boy. Where did you go? Why are you called Zero?
Jax didn't warn me about how curious you are, he replies. I guess this is what makes you a good bounty hunter.
The way he's responding reminds me of code stuck in an infinite loop, going round and round in useless circles. Or politicians who know exactly how to evade a question they don't want to answer. People who can turn a question on you to take the heat off themselves. Maybe Zero doesn't want to answer me. Maybe he doesn't even know. Whatever the reason, I won't be getting anything out of him voluntarily. Nothing more than these piecemeal replies. I shove down the urge to keep pressing him. If he won't tell me himself, then I'll have to gather info on my own. So I try a different kind of question. What are you planning? I force myself to say.
We're going to insert a virus into Hideo's algorithm, Zero says.
He holds his hand out, and a glowing data packet appears over his palm.
The instant it's in, it will trigger a chain reaction that deletes the algorithm entirely and cripples the Neuralink itself. But to do this successfully, we have to launch it from inside Hideo's own account, his actual mind. And we have to do this on the day of the closing ceremony, at the very moment when the beta lenses finally connect to the algorithm.
I guess the rumor about when the beta lenses would convert to algorithm lenses is true after all. It makes sense. Theoretically, there'll be a split-second delay when the beta lenses are hooked into the algorithm, but not yet influenced by it. When it's setting itself up. That's the only chance they'll get to insert a virus. And when exactly are the beta lenses connecting to the algorithm? I ask.
Right at the start of the closing ceremony's game.
I look sidelong at him. How does he know so much about Hideo's plans? So, I'm going to have to get into his mind, I repeat. Literally.
As literal as it gets, Zero replies. And the only way into the algorithm, into his mind, is for Hideo himself to allow it. That's where you come in.
You want me to warm up to Hideo?
I want you to do whatever it takes.
He'll never go for it, I reply. After our last encounter, I doubt he'll ever want to see me again. He already suspects I'm out to stop him.
I think you underestimate his feelings for you. He waves his hand once.
The world around us disappears, then wraps us both inside news footage of Hideo leaving an event while being swarmed on all sides by anxious reporters and fans. This is from 2 nights ago, after Hideo had announced the rematch between the Phoenix Riders and Team Andromeda. His bodyguards shout and push, cutting a path for him, and a good many paces behind him walks Ken, who looks pale and distraught. I've never seen the two of them like this, walking so far apart. As the security team forms a stern line in front of the crowds, one of the reporters shouts a question at Hideo.
Are you still dating Amika Chen? Are you two an item?
Hideo doesn't react to the question, at least not obviously. But I can see the tightening of his shoulders, the tension in his jaw. His eyes stay turned down, focused intensely on the path before him. I look away from Hideo's haunted expression, but it remains seared into my mind. But you're his real weakness, I insist, forcing myself to concentrate.
You must know that. Hideo would do anything for you.
We have discussed Hideo's potential responses to me, Zero says casually, as if he were telling me about the weather. He hasn't seen me in a decade. His reaction to me won't be directed at me, but at the Black Coats, and it will be revenge he's seeking. So, we need someone with 1 degree of separation. You. He speaks of Hideo as if his brother were nothing more than target practice. When I search his gaze, all I see is darkness. Something impenetrable and unfeeling. It's like looking at a person who isn't a person at all. I lean against the desk and bow my head. Fine, I mumble. How do you suggest I do this? Zero finally smiles.
You're going to break into Hideo's mind, and I'm going to show you how.
Chapter 7.
Come join me in the dark world, Zero says.
He waves his hand once again, and a screen appears between us, asking me if I want to link with him for a session. A direct connection with Zero. What kind of thoughts and emotions would I get from him? I hesitate for another moment, then reach out and accept our link. The hotel room around me darkens at the edges until I can't make out Zero's face anymore. A few seconds later, I've sunken into a pitch-black abyss. I hold my breath at the familiar, drowning sensation that always settles over me right before I go down under to the dark world. Then, slowly, it materializes. At first, I recognize it. Water drips into potholes dotting the streets, forming miniature reflecting pools of the red neon signs that line the building walls. They display a constant stream of personal data stolen from unprotected accounts that dared to wander down here. Stalls line the road itself, each one lit with strings of lights, hawking all the things I'm used to seeing. Drugs, illegal weapons, cryptocurrency exchanges, discontinued Warcross virtual items, and unreleased avatar clothing. This is a location I should be familiar with, and yet none of these buildings are what I remember. Nor are the streets or signs recognizable. All the sidewalks are empty.
Looks strange, doesn't it?
Zero's sudden presence beside me makes me jump. When I face him, he's hidden behind armor again. Black metal plates covering him from head to toe gleam under crimson lights. He moves like a shadow. While the few people passing us are anonymous, no one appears to notice him. In fact, if I didn't know better, I'd say they were giving him a wide berth without even realizing he's there. It's not clear to me if they can even see his figure, but they definitely notice the black cuffs we both wear. No one wants anything to do with us. Tentatively, I reach out through our link to see if I can catch any emotions coming from Zero. But he feels calm, his temperament smooth as glass. Then, a ripple of amusement.
Poking around already? Too curious for your own good, he says. And I remember that he can sense me, too. I quickly lean away.
Where is everyone? I ask him.
After Hideo activated his algorithm, any user who had already switched to the new Neuralink lenses became restricted from logging on to the dark world. It took out a good number of the people who used to wander down here. Others have been compelled to go to the authorities with what information they know about this place. There have been dozens of raids in the past couple of days. Those who can still access the dark world have gone deeper underground, rebuilding as they went. Many of the spots you're familiar with won't be here.
I wander down the road, trying to get my bearings. On a normal day, a market like this would be swarming with anonymous avatars. Today, it's a trickle, and many look too uneasy to stop at the illegal stands.
This is a good thing, I tell myself. I should be happy about it.
And Hideo was right to do this to the dark world. Haven't I spent years hunting people down here? This isn't a good place. There are pockets of the dark world so disturbing that they ought to be permanently wiped out. People so perverse and evil that they deserve to rot in jail. They should be afraid. But the idea of one person having that kind of reach down here, to put his hand inside someone's mind and compel them to leave this place.
What's going on over there? I ask when we walk past a stand in a night market.
Even though it's a small shop, there must be a crowd of well over 200 people gathered around it. When I look long enough at the stand, a number appears over it. 50,000. The sheer volume of visitors keeps causing the shop to crash, and from here, it looks like the stand is collapsing into a pile and resetting itself over and over.
They're auctioning off cases of beta lenses, Zero replies. Rare commodities, as you can guess.
I realize that the number over the stand is the price that the beta lenses are currently going for.
50,000 notes for a single pair.
The bidders obviously have their own beta lenses to even be in the dark world, so my guess is that they're here on behalf of others. There's a desperation in the space that makes it feel dangerous. Already, arguments are breaking out, and overhead, I can see users being doxxed by angry competitors, their private info thrown up on the neon red signs spanning the sides of the building walls. I quicken my pace until we've left the stand behind us. We're somewhere close to where the pirate's den was the last time I saw it, although the roads have shifted since then. When the Black Lake comes into view, there's no ship floating on the water. I turn to Zero, startled. The pirate's den has never been successfully shut down. Is it gone? I ask him. He looks skyward. I tilt my head to follow his gaze. High above the dark world's nonsensical buildings and Escher-like stairways, under a smoky brown night sky, is a pirate ship suspended in midair. Rope ladders dangle from it, far out of reach. Its masts are lit up with cascading neon colors that highlight the clouds with electric shades of pink and blue and gold.
After Hideo activated his algorithm, Zero says, one dark world user, afflicted by the new lenses, went to authorities and ratted out where the pirate's den was. There was a raid down here, but cockroaches are hard to eliminate.
I give him a humorless smile at that. The dark world won't go down without a fight. The pirates just move out of the water and into the skies.
Zero cocks his head slightly to one side. He must already have the entrance code to the new pirate's den figured out, because a second later, one of the ship's rope ladders starts descending toward us. It stops right in front of us, at the perfect height.
Zero holds a hand out at the ladder and turns to me.
After you.
I walk past him and grab one of the ladder's rungs tightly. He steps on it after me, his gloved hands clasping the rope on either side of me. As we rise, I look over his arm and down at the city. I've never seen the dark world from the sky before. It looks even less logical than it does from the ground. Some of the buildings resemble spiral staircases that disappear into the clouds,